First of all, with regard to questions concerning Yichud, we do have this book in English called Laws of Purity from Rav Akshar, and there you'll find in detail all types of decisions concerning the laws of Yichud. But I prefer to go on with you directly the words of this Mishnah, the last Mishnah of Kiddushin. So the Mishnah begins with, someone wants to say it, just the first din of the Mishnah.
Kosher Asku im
Asakov.
Kosher Asakov im Anashim. The law is Yachet im Hanashim.
For this, it's good. You want to use an Art School Mishnah?
There's another one. Let me give you another one for that.
Everybody that is engaged in with women mustn't be secluded with women.
Mustn't be what?
Mustn't have yichud with women.
Should seclude himself with women.
Mustn't seclude himself with women.
Yeah.
A person should not teach his son a trade with women.
So we see the direct connection. In other words, a person, as we know, is permitted to be by himself a man with two women, who are kosher women. Just a minute, permitted to be together with three women, not with two. Two is not allowed to be. No person, no man should be together with two women, because one protects the other. But he may be together with three or four women. But if his business is a business for women,
yes,
like perfume and women's clothes and so on, then he shouldn't be together with them at all. Because according to the first opinion, which comes from Tanakama, he should not be together alone. If his wife is with him, there's no problem. But otherwise, he shouldn't. And therefore, a person should also not teach his son a profession, a trade, which will bring him to contact with women. And then Rabbi Meir says, so what should a person do? He should always teach his son an umnot, the key of a color. And they say, some of the comments say, what's the connection? Nakia means it should be a type of trade where you won't come to have lewd thoughts. It means it should be a trade where he's not too much together with women. It's the same principle. And even though it might mean it's a bit more limited, doesn't matter. Hashem will help him. That's the interrelationship. According to which, some say, Rabbi Meir disagrees with the first opinion, because he comes to tell us that he's got to make sure it's in the key of a color. For some, so this question is, does he agree with the first opinion, or is he even more strict? It's clear there's a relationship between these two aspects. Now, now we begin with the whole discussion in the Mishnah, the long Mishnah, which deals with what should a person teach his son when it comes to teaching him a trade, teaching him how to have parnasah. So the question is, this ending of the tractate Kiddushin, which the rest of it has nothing directly to do with marriage. It's more got to do with to which extent should a person rely upon Hashem, to which extent should a person work for his living. So can you tell me what's the connection of this with the major subject, Kiddushin, which is marriage? I think you should be able to give me a simple answer to this question.
It's woman.
Huh?
Woman.
What do you mean?
Well, Kiddushin is a woman, and
this
is being secluded with woman.
Pardon?
This is being secluded with woman.
That's the first part. That's the interrelation of the first phrase of this Mishnah. But then the Mishnah goes on to say, tell us that we should know a livelihood is not dependent upon the profession, it's dependent upon the Creator.
Right.
Yes, sir. Or everything is according to Zechut, everything is according to his merit.
Same with Shidduchim then.
Huh?
Same with Shidduchim.
That's what?
Also depends on merit.
Yeah? Okay, that's one answer. Uh-huh. Another answer you can give me? Well, you know, when you want, and I'll put it, it's connected directly with the first beginning of Masechet Kiddushin. You know, one likes to make a hadron when you conclude a Masechet, you try to connect the beginning with the end of that tractate. What's the connection between the beginning of the tractate Kiddushin and this? We're coming to the last subject, which is discussed in detail also in the Gemara.
Which is speaking of Parnassa, right?
Yes.
So you need to give something valuable to the woman in order to be mekadeshes.
Yes.
So how are you gonna get that valuable by Parnassa? I would say.
Well, what does the first mission of Kiddushin say? Then you remember it.
Yeah, three ways a woman is acquired: and star, and chesed, and.
And then what's the first line of the Gemara?
Isha Niklas.
Isha Niklas.
The
Kesef.
Kesef
Minolan. Where do you get the money from? Kesef Minolan is what's the source for Kiddushin through something of value. But the phrase that begins with Kiddushin is Kesef Minolan. When you come to the parsha of Kiddushin, that means you want to get married. And you want to go get engaged, what's the first question that you should ask yourself these days?
Money.
Kesef Minolan, where will we get the money from to make the
Yeah, that's the question I have.
That's right. Therefore I say, that's why I thought you'd all of you be able to give the answer.
No,
right.
The
end of the Masechet has a lot to do with the beginning. At the beginning, Kesef Minolan means what's the source in the Chumash that a person can change the status from being single to being married with money. And silver. But of course there it speaks about the act of as a way change of status. But symbolically it means that's one of the first questions which the majority of students in yeshiva have that question. They're not married yet, they want to get married, then the first question is where will we get the money from? Yeah? Well, we're simple. Because to get married you're going to have got to have an income. So where will it come from? That's the question.
Hashem.
Huh?
Says here, Parnassa, it depends from
Hashem. Okay, well, can you rely on it? Yeah. If you can rely on it, well, it comes entirely from Hashem. Why do you have to teach your sons an umlaut? Is it important for parents to teach their sons a profession? And what type of profession it goes into? But if it all comes from Hashem, Hashem will provide it, won't he? Or do we have to make his tadlut? Well, that's discussed further in the mission of the Gemara.
And at the end it says you teach him Torah, so...
Yeah. But now I want to speak about we have to go a little bit further in the Mishnah. So the Mishnah says, Rav Meir says, you should teach your son, Umis and Kiva Kala, and carry on. David, can you continue the Mishnah? Viet Palel?
Viet Palel.
Viet Palel, you should pray. Lemi?
Third line in the Mishnah.
Place, sorry.
To the one who owns Wealth and all possessions belong to him. It's good if you've got your own Gemara to make comments, to make some grammatical remarks, to be able to understand what it's about. There's no such thing as any profession which doesn't have people who are poor and people who are rich. As we know, there are poor doctors and rich doctors. And there are poor lawyers and rich ones. And there are poor shopkeepers and rich ones. So you see, it's not a question entirely of effort, not even a question of having talents. It's not the profession that produces poverty. Carry on. Wealth does not come necessarily from the type of profession you choose. Everything is according to his merit. Just a minute, stop. Let's stop it. What does it mean, his merit? What does that mean? What's the meaning of the word zakut?
That's a very good question. It's a very good question. Is it determined before you're born? Is it determined on Rosh Hashanah? Is it adjusted according with the person's behavior? It's a few different questions.
Well, let's see what Rashi says first. A good question, very good analysis. Rashi in the key of the color. The Gemara will explain what this means. We'll see later. While Yomar Belibo should not say in his mind, Natzu Einam Hashem, I don't want to choose the profession to be a shopkeeper, or let's say to be a doctor, because doesn't this make you rich? And no, there are certain places where doctors are in demand and they make a very good salary, and others where they don't. The same applies to a shop. Yivakesh Rachamev Lemisha Oshiro, he should ask for compassion from the one who owns all wealth. But what does it say here? But everything depends upon the zuchut. So generally speaking, zuchut means a merit. So therefore you should ask Hashem, look, I've got certain merits. Yeah? I've got merits of the forefathers, and I've got my own merits. I try to fulfill your will. So please, Hashem, help me. And when you ask Hashem, he answers, generally speaking. Now, Tosfos says something very unusual.
But he answers, but sometimes not in the way that we want.
That's right.
You said he answers.
He answers what's really good for us, which might mean poverty.
Yes.
Something is good for us. It trains us. If you become wealthy, you might become corrupt.
I see.
Yeah. But Tosfos says, and this has to do with your analysis, who wants to say the Tosfos?
I call the physical perush lefi mazalo.
So Tosfos says according to his mazal. What's mazal?
Mazal
was the term before a person is born, earlier.
Mazal means a star, actually. The translation of mazal is star.
So, what does that mean? Astrology?
Destiny.
The horoscope?
The Jewish people.
Actually, I read in the Masechet Megillah, it's written very interestingly that Mazal is actually what you create during mitzvahs, you're doing creating protector, angel protectors, and during a virus is doing just the opposite. And this is called actually what is your Mazal like, because this is what is above you in the sky, which you created yourself actually, right?
Let's analyze this more carefully, because it's a very basic question which is important for us to understand. Tosfos equates zechut with mazal. Because Tosfos says why? Because here we're talking about livelihood, and with the qualification, it does not depend upon what work you do. Don't think that you're choice of profession and trade will automatically decide that you're going to have enough food, enough money to sort things out for your family, or to get married. So there's a statement in the Gemara, you'll find the statement where it says, "Boni v'chay u'mezoyni, la b'zchut etali milsa, matla etali milsa." There, the Gemara says explicitly what children you have, and how long you live, chayim, and how much panasa you have, how much life you have, do not depend upon zechut, upon merits, but they depend upon the mazal. So Torah distinguishes between zechut and mazal, because otherwise you've got a contradiction, the two statements. It mentions that it's been mezoini. What's mezoini? Livelihood. How can the Mishnah say livelihood depends upon zechut, when we have another Gemara which says no, it depends upon mazel? So we see that when it says here in the Mishnah zechut, they really mean mazel. So Tosfos assumes mazel is something which is decreed from above. Zechut is something which depends upon the merit of the person. That seems to be the opinion of Tosfos. So either Tosfos go into the astrological view, it's already decided. Mazel generally means already decided by the stars or the horoscope. And there's plenty of Gemara to prove it. For example, the Gemara says that if somebody's born under the horoscope of Mars, and Mars is the red planet, which represents, and in all civilizations represented power, military power, the Martian arts comes from the concept of Mars. So this person can be born in such a mazal. So he'll either become a murderer, a kidnapper, or he can also become a doctor, a surgeon, or a mohel, or a shofet. But he'll be bloodthirsty. Otherwise he will be able to have so much aggression, either to, you know, become a person who kills other people and finds a certain fulfillment in it, killing others. And who had that? Who had that quality?
He did.
Esav is even given the name Edom. Edom is the redness. And also, when he gave over his birthright to Yaakov, it was on the basis of him. He says, please pour down my throat, ha'adom, ha'adom azeh. This looks like blood and I want to swallow it. It's the reddened lentil soup. Look, because it was only half cooked. When it's half cooked, it goes red, and afterwards it goes yellow. So he said, I want it straight away. I would see was a person so aggressive. Who else was given the same redness? Who
David,
else?
David.
David Amelech. David Amelech used it for the good. Yes, he was very strong. With that power, he was able to kill Goliath. So therefore, it can be used for good. But the mazal therefore means the basic tendencies. But the Gemara also says in Nida that when a person, before a person is born, it's already decided whether it's become weak or strong, or whether it's become rich or poor. So we see wealth is predetermined. Hashem determines it. So the question is, how do we equate zechut with mazal? They're two different things. So Tosfos said the word zechut here does not mean the way it's usually used. Zechut here is the way, not his merit, what he deserves. But here it means what's predetermined. So now I'd like to go to this question more thoroughly, which I'd like you, got any for him here?
I have a few, I don't have.
Tosfos Yom Tov. Here's the Mishnah, the Tosfos Yomtov. Those who foreign the Hebrew, we'll see the Tosfos Yomtov, he raises these questions. Let me explain who are the major commentaries on the Mishnah. We have the most commonly used classical commentaries, the Patanura, who goes back to Rashi and to Rambam. The Rambam is one of the earliest commentators. The one who elaborated Mishnah is more, Cortez Yomtov Milton Heller. He was also a relative of the Maral, brings the Maral a lot in his commentaries, and he goes into basic questions that often come up in the Mishnah. And here, the point raised by the Mishnah is a very basic one. What does it mean? If everything depends upon Hashem the Mazal, why should a person bother to work at all? Anything, everything depends upon Hashem. Now can we say that Mazal is the same as a foot? Very difficult choice was this.
Who's the Tosfos Yomtov?
Huh?
Is Tosfos Yomtov one of the Tosavists?
Tosfos Yomtov?
Yeah, who is that?
No, it's much later than the two. The Tosavists spoke about yesterday in the additions to Rashi, the Rishonim. Tosfos Yomtov was the Rav of Krakow after the time of Beis Yosef. He's an early Aharon, called an Acharonim. So if you turn to the last Mishnah in the Mishnais, you see here, this is Yom Tov. Can you share? No, it won't be in that one.
It's not specific.
It's in this one?
No, this is not, this is also.
This is fine. It's not in there, no. No, it's in a...
I couldn't find it somewhere.
Okay, so perhaps I'll translate it directly then. That's it. But those who can follow Hebrew easily, share it with
them. This is Oscar. This is not a Mishnah.
I brought another one.
You brought that Oscar one?
I put it in.
Yeah,
guys,
okay. He's not using it, grab it.
No, but I put it in here.
It's one in Hebrew, it's not Oscar.
No,
have you got the Mishnah, Hebrew Mishnah? No.
Which Mishnah?
Oh, it's here, I'm sorry. The last Mishnah of the Jewish. It's here.
Adaran?
Yotalit?
Alek?
Rabbi Yehuda Meir? Lo Yere? Baba? Rima?
Well, I want you all to read the Mishnah in English, which you've already done, the first part of it, in any case.
Which better?
The last chapter, chapter 4, the last Mishnah. The last Mishnah of Kiddusha. So, can you share it?
Yeah. You want to come up here? You
got to look at somebody can read Hebrew.
I'm going
to
listen.
There's no point. I'll just say in... What's it say here? Hakol lefi zechuto. So he says, if everything depends upon merit, im hakol lefi zechuto, so why should you, it says you've got to daven for it. Why do you have to daven for it? It depends if you fulfill the mitzvahs or don't. That's what Hashem thinks is zechut, you deserve it, He'll give it to you. If you don't deserve it, you won't. Shim zechuto kedai, because if his merit is enough, surely Hashem will give him his reward. And if his merit is not enough, then we say, he won't get. He has to be poor. Poverty and wealth are dependent upon a person's sinfulness or saintliness in the eyes of Hashem. So how do you answer it?
The Torah, he
answers this as follows. It's like Torah says in a number of places. It says in the Gemara, Ein mazal li-Israel. Yeah? There's no such thing as, some would say, a Yid never has luck, you know, in mazal Yisrael. We don't have luck. We look today, whatever Jews try, doesn't help. We don't have any, we can't expect much fortune. Especially looking at what's happening today, nearly all over the world, whatever good things we do, they forget about them. Whatever mistakes we made, they exaggerate them. Use them to accuse us. If Jews don't have mazel, and often we even ask, why does the world treat us so differently? That's not really what it means, though. When you say in Muslim soil, it means the nations of the world are described in the Tanakh as being being influenced by the stars. But the people of Israel are not dependent upon the stars. Many of the nations believe the stars decide their fate. And even those who don't use the word the stars, they say it's all predetermined what's going to happen to us. The people of Israel were not under the predetermined decision of what goes on in the heavens and influences the earth, but we follow Zechut. Yeah. But on the other hand, Tois asks the question here as well. On the one hand, it says Ein Mazal Yisrael. On the other hand, it says children. With what children you have, and if you do or don't, what happens to the children? What happens to a person's length of life, which means health in life, and what happens to a person's livelihood, do not depend upon zchut, but depend upon mazel. So here we have a direct contradiction. On the one hand, we say, ein mazel yisrael. On the other hand, we say, mazel. As it applies even on a different level, this question, a more modern level. Even though it's like this, we find even until today, there'll be some Jewish commentators who say that there's such a thing as astrological influence. But the vast majority of modern educated people is to reject astrology entirely. Yeah. May a Jew be an astrologist? Question. Yeah. Some say no, he's not allowed to be. But the Rambam says, doesn't put an Isser on it, you're not allowed to be, but it says it's all ignorance. The Rambam was opposed to astrology in the extreme. He left it from him. He did believe that in life Hashem decides many things, which Hashem decides. And also that's something the human beings decide. We're given freedom, but Hashem ultimately controls the world. So, from the expression of the Gemara, it would appear the nation of the world might be under astrological influence, or they believe in it, but we Jews don't necessarily believe in it. So Tosfos gives the answer like this. He said, both powers exist. There is a mazal, there is a predetermined aspect to what happens to a human being in nearly all areas of life. But his merit can change it. The zchut, the big zchut, changes, let's say a person's predetermined term of life is till 90. But if he has a great zchut, Hashem will give him the ability to live till 100. To a great zchut, he lives till 100. If you want to put it in more modern terms, a person, if the doctor will say, there are many doctors say, a doctor will say this person can't live more than a few days, but if this person has a great zechut, Hashem will help him live more days. That's what we find that, let's say, with regard to Zecher Tzadik Livrov, Rav Eliashiv, about 12 years ago, something like that, he was in a very serious terminal stage in his life. And most of the surgeons gave up. But prayers were said everywhere, and the surgeon who was in charge of trying to save his life said it was a miracle. What a miracle. And he felt like his hand, when he did the surgery, was being directed from above. I spoke to him myself. I met him in America. Top surgeon. He said, surely the merit of his enormous dedication to teaching Torah and the prayers of hundreds and thousands of people that he should survive. He survived another 12 years or so, during which I personally had the benefit to attend many of his shiurim. So a zchut can change the mazel. When modern terms, you don't call it mazel, you don't call it astrology, but you call it the basic constitution of this person's body, according to all the normal procedures of medical possibilities, had no hope. But things happen. You see, things can happen. Things can change. It's a good. That's why that can change. As the Gemara brings, he brings the Gemara from Tanis, from Lozer and Pados, he said, also this connection. Hashem said to him, when he said, in order for you to live, I'll have to create a new world, destroy the world. Anyway, so this is Yom Tov wants to answer it like this. Inyan Kazet, for such a matter, the prayer helps. The question is, well, how can prayer help? If it all depends either predetermined, or a merit, what need prayer for? So he says, yeah, prayer can help. Because the merit is not, or sometimes not enough by itself to change the predetermined situation of this person. Therefore, every chassid has to pray that the schus should change the mazal. Or put it in modern terms, that the great Satan is this person, should be, give him a higher level. A person prays for himself. Should always pray for himself amongst others and pray for others first if possible. But prays for himself. You also say, look, please Hashem, remember I did this and I did that. Remember all the good things. And Hashem will sometimes say, well, I also remember if you're going to carry on doing these good things, then I listen to your prayer. But if you don't make the effort of prayer, it's difficult to change the mazal. And now let's go further to what Guy quite rightly pointed out. When you come, we know there are many things that are decided in Rosh Hashanah. Yeah. So they have the same situation. If we say everything depends, everything is predetermined, and Rosh Hashanah Hashem makes already a decision, then after Rosh Hashanah, if according to most commentators, the nature of a person's life from one year to the next is decided by Hashem, is decided by Yom Kippur. It is written in the book of the living, you live. If not, the other way. So that means after Yom Kippur, or some say after Shoshana Rab, when you give the last chance, there's no real point in praying. Everything already decided. So therefore the answer is no. The decision has been made from Roshana is really, you know, it's got a lot to do with the concept of the cycle of the year. You go back to the initial point where you were before, and now of course see your new cycle. Hashem gives you a new chance to live. How are you going to use it? So if a decision has been made on the basis of your record from the past year, you don't deserve to live anymore, or you deserve to become ill, or you deserve to become poor, so how can you change it? The answer is, even after Shana Rabbah. But it had to be decided if the tefillah is strong enough, and you can even say tefillah and zechut go together. And perhaps here we'll make use of the very deep interpretation which is developed by Rav Hirsch. Rav Hirsch ben Magna also goes in a similar direction. To understand anything of the deeper concepts of the Torah's outlook upon life, it's good to go to the language of the Tanakh. So how do you say in Hebrew to pray?
Huh?
What's the root of Hitpalel?
Shorish.
What's the Shorish? What form is it? You know, there's reflexive. Different binyanim.
Peel.
No, Hitpalel is not peel.
What reflexive. Is it?
Pardon?
It's reflexive.
Reflexive.
Peel.
Reflexive means Hitpalel.
Hitpalel
is to work in oneself. So what's the root of palal? What's palal mean? Vaveinu palilim?
Action.
No, palal, pe, lamed, lamed, the root means to judge. Right. So therefore, lit palil is self-judgment. Yep. That's basically, so that's what Rav Hirsch explained also, if I'm not going to know too much, it was explained on that basis, the name tefillin. Yep. But tefillin is not mentioned in the Chumash, the word tefillin. But tefillin is really a concentration of self-judgment. But it's the tefillin themselves that create the power of judgment. It means you have to judge your mind and your actions in the light of what's in the boxes of the tefillin. And the Hitpalel is the same thing. It's the main aspect of prayer is self-judgment. In other words, we know there are other words for to pray. Tchin is supplication. But lihit palel is to take the words of the siddur. That explains also why we have a fixed siddur. The siddur is made up, it's not just self-expression. Self-expression of a person's desire to be close to Hashem. And a person's prayer that Hashem should help him with the many words. In the Tanakh, the 10 words describe different aspects of prayer. Whether it's the praise of Hashem, or whether it's a supplication to Hashem, it's all interrelated with self-judgment. Hashem listens to you. Hashem is the highest level of perfection, moral perfection, midat chesed. So therefore you have to judge yourself, how far do I live up to walking in the ways of Hashem, becoming like unto Him? How far am I living the Tzelem Elokim? Do you have, like we, in English, what's godliness? What's godliness? Godliness is to feel the power of God in my life. That's godliness. It's not so much just being aware that Hashem exists. It's even more so that Hashem should enter into my life. And Hashem, Hashem's will, the derech Hashem, v'alachta b'drachav, to walk in the midst of Hashem, has got to enter my life. So therefore, the tefillah and the zchut go together.
I just wanted to say, it's like what you're saying, it's an introspective thing.
Yeah.
Your wealth is self-determined, but it's really like what you do with it, because you don't know when time, like when you'll get it, or from where it comes from.
Yeah.
So basically when you're praying, it's like you're thinking to yourself, it's will I get to keep my wealth because of what like my responsibilities are to do with it? It's sort of like the story with I think Rabbi Ben Zakkai, when he sees the woman on the side of the road looking through the dung for food, and he remembers her from being like her father was a big Baal Chesed, and she said, but my father didn't give enough, and then they lost their wealth. Is it sort of like this idea?
Yeah. So it's. Anyway, I'll continue here with the description of how to reconcile the concept of zechut with the concept you've got to pray for it. He says that what will his prayer help if the mazel's already decided and nature goes on? So the nature of his situation continues. So what does it help a person follows any profession? What's it going to help him? It won't harm him, won't help him. Everything is according to what's predetermined. It's like the question, obviously a person who believes everything is predetermined, that there's no freedom of choice, there's no point in praying. Prayer is dependent upon possible changes. So there must be possible changes. And this Mishnah is difficult because the Mishnah implies that the fi zechutoi, according to zechut, the student's got to pray. So therefore, he says that if there's no zechut, then his mazal can't change. Because, therefore he says, so why has he got to pray? He's got to, that Hashem will not change things through prayer alone. Prayer must go together with zechut. So that the zechut should cause the predetermined situation to change, he's got to change, he's got to add to it prayer. But also he's also got to choose a profession. That still remains a question. So the person who deals with this in a fantastically deep manner is the Tiferet Yisrael, whose commentary you have here also. Very important. So I'll just also paraphrase here what he says. So he puts it this way. He says, if everything depends upon mazal or predetermined, whether you call it horoscope, it's their predetermined situation, then what will prayer help? Like all the philosophers who believe there's no such thing as freedom of will, so obviously there's no point praying. What are you praying for if everything is predetermined? Whether predetermined by Hashem or predetermined by nature, many modern people want to say. The prayer doesn't help. Prayer only helps if you can think, you can change. But how if here it says everything depends on the zechut, so it's a bit of a question. Anyway, he says the Tiferet goes into this more deeply and touches upon the question, what is really meant by mazal? First he says,
who is the speaker here?
What Tiferet Yisrael is one of the later commentators on the Mishnah, who, in fact, he has fantastic essays on all types of problems. One of the most famous essays is how to understand the geological record in the world. He was a very, very big expert in many of the sciences and discoveries in his time. You know, already 150 years ago, many of his comments are very valid for us today. So he said like this on this question. Mazal does not mean, according to him, the horoscope. The horoscope means the person's character and everything is decided when he's born. He's born under a certain constellation. He says, even that chas v'shalom, that we should believe this. And we see that our early Go'onim, they were very much opposed to this. And above them was the Rambam. And in his letters, in his Tshuva to, when they asked from Marseilles, he said, I received the question, do we accept astrology or not? So he says, no, if you don't believe in it. In fact, it says in the Chumash, you should never follow astrologers. It's a Chumash, it's a prohibition, don't follow them. And if we do find statements that imply it, they are all to be understood allegorically. Like nearly all the Agadot of the Gemara, you should not take them literally. And that's what the Rambam says. So what's mazal mean? So he says mazal means something else, to understand it. He says, for this you have to understand the following. Everything known in the world has a cause. Sometimes there are causes that will definitely produce a specific result. The effect of the cause is always the same. And there are many causes where there are effects that are possibilities. here he, this even it is very interesting that the modern concept of causality, especially after the quantum theory, is you can no longer speak about absolute laws of nature. It is just plausibility. In other words, there's a majority in favor of a certain cause producing a certain effect. But there's also a random element. In the subatomic world, which has been discovered, there's such a thing as a random element, which means you can't even be sure that all the causes will produce the same result. That means under normal circumstances, everything that goes up will come down. There's laws of gravity, but there are exceptions to the law of gravity, as we knew today. Then he says, we know that the efforts of human being in the world, they have a purpose to produce joy, pleasure, and to produce honor. And they can be produced in different ways, by physical power, by the power of money, and the power also of the spirit. And these three different types of efforts, they can come either through straightforward effort of the person, they can come also through saintliness, and they can also come through predetermined causes. Can you follow also inside? You've got the Tiber Sisrol?
The what?
You've got the Mishnah Tiber Sisrol? So good. And now it's Mishnah Tiber Sisrol. If you look onto Jochen, the end of Mishnah's last page, Jochen Lepoyas. The first column, Aleph. I'm halfway down. Because he's analyzed what's the meaning of mazel. Because the Mishnah says, you want to know, I suppose many of you have got an idea, how are you going to earn money? Yep. One person will say, I earn money by, my person chooses a skill he's been given. I've been given the skill of translating, I'll make him a translator. Another person's got a skill, music, he'll say, through my musical talents. So he says, a person, there's a general law of cause and effect. The general law of cause and effect also applies to human efforts. So therefore a person knows my human effort comes through certain causes. He uses hishtadlut v'hatzdakot. Hishtadlut means physical effort. Hatzdakot means saintly qualities. These are not causes that are absolute, that will definitely produce an effect. There are only possibilities, potential. A person, let's say, exercises a lot. He knows that's the way he gets strong muscles. Sometimes he gets strong muscles, sometimes maybe he'll break. He'll strain some of the muscle too much and he'll fail.
But some people not work out all the time.
No 100%. It's not 100%. It's good exercise will generally produce a good physical body. But you can't say, you don't see 100% laws of cause and effect. There are limits of different natures. The same applies also, he says, to saintliness. So he says that these are not definite. So all things that come, either physical effort or financial power or mental and emotional power, do not produce definite effects. They produce majority effects. But mazal comes through to flow. Mazal is a reference to those aspects in life that will definitely produce an effect. It's like a huge flood of water, that will certainly, the huge water from a big dam, you take away the seichel, what do you call the seichel?
The barrier, the wall.
What's it called?
The dam.
The dam? Yeah, take away the dam. Then the water will come down in an enormous rush. But he says there are two types of mazal flowing. One is one which you can see, and one that you can't see. The one you can see is the natural force that seems to always produce the same result. And this depends on the human being. In the human being's life, a person also has certain natural powers in his body, which are dependent upon his father and mother. That's what we call, it's called today the genetical structure of the human being. In other words, his initial nature, which is given. And then, but even for his body, there's a second type of influence on him, which has to do with his climate, his environment, where he lives. And also has to do with the time, and also has got to do what he eats and drinks. It's also got to do how he's educated. Also has to do with what type of work he does. All these six aspects join together to produce a body that's either weak or strong. They produce money, either rich or less. His wisdom will increase or decrease. But both these things can be for good and also can afterwards be for bad. That's why this is called the hidden mazal, which you can't really... The divine power of wisdom has decided before a person is born, which is what the sages say, famous Gemara, that before a baby is born, then the malach, that means the divine power, which makes a decision upon this baby, decides what's going to happen to this seminal drop. What will happen? Will he or she become strong or weak, wise or foolish, rich or poor? From here we learn out the principle, Hakol b'nei shamayim, everything in the hands of heaven, except the fear of heaven. So this is what we call the basic determinism of the human being, and this is how does it go on? That Gemara, it goes on and says, what is not decided, whether it's going to be a saint or a sinner. That's everything, because that's called Yerat Shamayim. What you do with these qualities, that means to explain, it's not that this is the only aspect of predeterminism. It's rather predetermined how we grow up. Education, environment, all these things have an impact. But it's not things over which the person has real control. The control he has, is he going to use it for good, is he going to use it for bad? The person will be very clever, and he uses his cleverness to produce destruction. So from this, you know, we'll want to explain the Mishnah, but I'll have to leave to the next sheet. I think it's quite important. Not the next page, if you've got this. The whole next page goes into, that's a huge book dealing with this subject. And also Tiferet Yisrael. But the last page of the Mishnah is, you'll find the Atana. Now we'll come to explain the Mishnah in the light of this. You'll see it's quite a fantastic interpretation of what it says here briefly in the Mishnah concerning livelihood, which is a very important question for all of us, especially when you're not yet married. What's going to know? You know how you're going to manage? How do you look at it? And sometimes on this, if a person's got the right outlook on this, it will make a difference to how long it's going to stay in the yeshiva. So it's quite important, I think, for everyone here. And also how he's going to manage when he does get married. And there are, I can tell you from my experience, there's plenty of situations where there was all the money in the world and it didn't work out well. And others where there was no money and it worked out very well, the marriage. They were able to make do. So what says here in the Mishnah, a lot of truth in it, but when I'll already ask you a question. You should all look at the rest of the Mishnah in English, the whole Mishnah, and you'll find there seems to be a contradiction between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Nahoroi. They disagree one with the other, if you go through. And the Gemara says, Rabbi Meir had two names. Meir means he brings light in pure Hebrew. And Nohoroi means the one who produces light in Aramaic. And Rabbi Nohoroi was the same person as Rabbi Meir. So he contradicts himself. So I want you to find the answer to that question. Because he said, I'm only teaching my son Torah, nothing else.
But that's like his pen name.
Rabbi Noah said.
It's like his pen name. Well, many authors do that.
No, he made a ruling, a person should always, olam, a person should always teach his son a profession. In fact, he shouldn't teach him something which might lead him to swindle. You see, it's got to be a profession. The key of a kala is not just, as we said before, we shouldn't meet too many women and perhaps have lewd thoughts. But it also means it should be one which is 100% honest, not leading to swindle other people. It's very important. It's very important. Everyone's got no profession. And afterwards it says himself, my son, I'm only teaching him Torah.
So you're saying that the same man wrote in two different names on two different sides of the coin?
Yeah.
Where does
it's already. I don't want to miss your lunch.
Where does emunah comes into play?
Huh?
Emunah.
Right.
Emunah.